You're listening to the Newswatch feature on KVSE 88.1 FM, your sound alternative. Our guest today is St. Cloud State University's new president, Earl H. Porter III, and he replaces Dr. Roy Saigo, who was the university president for the last 7 years. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today, President Porter.
My pleasure.
Now, during your welcome reception this month, you said the first item on the agenda is to do a lot of learning and getting familiar with the campus. How is that coming along?
Well, it's sort of like drinking water from a fire hose. The amount of information that's incoming is immense. But the reception has been very warm, and people are very eager to teach me. So I'd say it's going very well.
And how would you describe your initial impression of St. Cloud State University and the community in general?
Well, St. Cloud is a very rich and complicated place. And the university, there are many wonderful things going on at the university. The community, I found, is very supportive of the university. I've met lots of students in particular in the community, and I have not met one student working in a restaurant or downtown or in, walking across campus who isn't excited about being here and delighted with what they found at St. Cloud State.
How is SCSU different from your previous university, Southern Oregon State?
Well, it's larger. I come from an institution of about 5,000 students, so this is more than three times the size of that institution. It's also located much closer to a major metropolitan area. Southern Oregon University is 5.5 hours away from Portland, Oregon, surrounded by mountains in a part of the state that's pretty isolated from the rest of the state. And this is a very different environment in that regard.
You're listening to the Newswatch feature on KVSE 88.1 FM, your sound alternative. Our guest today is newly appointed St. Cloud State University President, Dr. Earl H. Porter III. What are some of the strengths of the university?
Well, I think the quality of the teaching and the interaction that faculty have with students is one of the things that is mentioned by students, faculty, the parents of students I've met, and certainly it's a core commitment of the staff. I think that the next thing is that it's a strong community. People care about each other, and they work to create a place that's a positive learning environment for students. Individually, in terms of programming, there's a good team of deans, each leading their colleges to grow and address the needs of the region. We have a couple new programs that are really excellent examples of that kind of responsiveness. And I'm just beginning to learn the stories of how individual faculty members have made an impact on a business or a community or benefited the region significantly. It is a great resource for this region.
In what areas do you think the university needs improvement?
Well, the strength that I have found is not universally understood by the people of Minnesota. And I think even not universally appreciated by the university community. The writers on organizational culture have often said that if you go into an organization with a strong culture, you will find the same understanding of that organization at every entry point. And likewise, in the external community, if you can talk to people in any sector of the community, any different audience group, they'll have a common understanding of the enterprise. What I find here is that the understanding is uneven, that there is not one unified understanding of the university, either within the university community or in the community outside. And that's just evidence that we need to do a better job of building understanding of what we are, our contributions to the region, et cetera. It's not uncommon for people to talk about the economic value of this university to the region, but people don't talk about the power of having an intellectual center for this community, of having a cultural center for the community, an institution that is an engine for change and development. And so there are many aspects of what this university means to the region that aren't fully understood either inside or outside. So it's that sense of ourselves that we can share widely, that will build support for the institution, that will build commitment and attract students to study here.
And how do we go about changing that mindset?
Well, first of all, you have to sort of, people might say, mine the data. Dig into all the program areas, understand what's happening, and pull the evidence that you've gathered into a coherent vision. Secondly, there are areas where we're just beginning to build partnerships, expanding partnerships with folks in the region, and some of those partnerships need to be developed further, whether for economic development or cultural partnerships or whatever. So we need to sort of uncover our strengths, articulate what those strengths are, and then select some limited set of next steps to take in those areas of strength to shine the light on what we're doing and enhance the contributions that we're making.
Have you been in touch with President Saigo?
Before I got here, we talked weekly. And, of course, we had dinner the night before his last day. He and Barbara Saigo and I had dinner together. But we haven't had any time together since that.
Did you get any words of advice from him that you can share with our listeners?
When President Saigo, I think the most important thing he told me was that this is going to be a very special couple months. It's going to be a time of learning, a time when people are very excited about the new president's arrival. People will be eager to share their understanding and their visions, and that I should take the fullest advantage possible of this time and this opportunity, and to enjoy it. And to celebrate with the people of St. Cloud State University and the people of St. Cloud all the wonderful things about this university. There'll be time enough later for challenges and plans and announcements, but this is the time to learn and to celebrate.
Do you think he has left the university in good standing?
It is fundamentally very sound, and that condition was created during his presidency. The strength of the financial condition is excellent. Enrollments are strong. We're attracting more new students each year than we did the previous year in the last few years. And it's fundamentally very strong.
What is the vision you have for St. Cloud State University?
Well, you pointed out that this is a time of learning for me. So my vision is in formation. And clearly, the people of the region from which we draw most of our students have hopes for the future of St. Cloud State University, and I'm listening to those dreams. They imagine an economic development engine. They imagine an institution that cost effectively and efficiently gets their students to their career objectives as quickly as possible, which means time to graduation, availability of courses, the efficiency of our systems, advising systems that support student success. They yearn for an organization that enlivens the life of the city. The people of St. Cloud understand already that the strength of this community in part rests on the strength of the university. And they would like to see a vibrant university in a thriving community. And so I think those things are possible. I think that we have the elements that correctly organized and directed can accomplish that. It's already a great economic asset, a great cultural asset. But we have there's the potential for partnership with the city to lift up the reputation and the success of both the city and the university together that I think we have more work to do to realize.
How would you describe your leadership style?
Well, first of all, I think it's my approach to leadership is based on a fundamental respect for the people who work in this organization. I value all the work that is done. Secondly, what drives my approach to leadership is a very strong commitment to the mission of the institution. It's, if you look at my career choices, I'm passionately committed to the development of learning communities that create spaces in which students can achieve their objectives. And that means a community that's characterized by curiosity, by an understanding that development of a university student is the development of the whole person, that is their skills to be a citizen, their development of the skills in their discipline, their ability to work together in a multicultural society, and that a strong university community has to have boundaries with its surrounding community that are porous, that we recognize with the city the shared responsibility for creating this environment. So I've been a community building, a community builder who's brought people together for a purpose for my whole career. That means I listen a lot. That means I reflect back what I hear. But I also recognize that a leader is must act, must decide, and must enable a community to move. So it's a balance between respect for the community and the acceptance of the responsibility to lead that community.
You're listening to the Newswatch feature on KVSC 88.1 FM, your sound alternative. Our guest today is St. Cloud State University President, Dr. Earl H. Potter III. Now, the University Faculty Association is very active on campus. Mm-hmm. What's your experience in supporting a strong faculty organization that defends research time and teaching independence and other faculty rights in general?
Well, the last two campuses on which I have served have had unionized faculty as well. In the most recent case, I was the chief negotiator for management with the faculty union. And in Oregon, where I was, we had the only campus among the unionized campuses that concluded negotiations without arbitration or intervention. We worked collaboratively together to build the space for research and maintain the commitment to teaching that you described, Samarant. And it's very important to me. The partnership with the faculty is very important to me. Our interests are common. We care about our students. We have to work within the same environment, an environment where we never have all the resources to do all the things that we want. And so we have to make difficult choices together how to prioritize our commitment to achieve the things that are most important. And we are both, I am, as is the Faculty Association, committed to creating an environment of respect in which we can together consider those difficult questions and make the right choices.
Upon your appointment, you had said you need information and you need it quick, which means you want communication to be open and mm-hmm. forthcoming. Now, along that line, how do you propose members of the university community disagree with you should that situation arise?
And let me restate the question okay. So to make sure I understand. So how do I propose that we work together when we're in disagreement? Got it. Well, it's interesting that statewide, the IFO working with Minsku have adopted what is referred to as an interest-based approach to bargaining, which means that both sides work together to create an understanding in the other side what they care about and what they're trying to accomplish. And so, for example, we the IFO and the administration might say we both are trying to achieve faculty compensation that puts our faculty in a competitive position, among our peers, in a way that gives the Minsku and the universities of the Minsku system the greatest opportunity to achieve their purpose and it become stronger, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very broad statement. And that within that broad statement, you worked under to get the facts correct, how do we, in fact, compare with our peers? And what are the targets? And what would it mean to make a commitment of X, Y, or Z in terms of our budgets? And what are our budgets? And how much money do we have? So in each one of these cases, you try to understand the other party's interests and their perspective. You work to clarify the facts. And then you begin to examine alternative approaches to a resolution or agreement. And you evaluate those approaches within the context of your objectives and the facts you've established. In that way, you stay fact-based, evidence-based, and purpose-driven. And that's the way I prefer to deal with all matters of disagreement. What is the situation? What are we trying to accomplish? What are the facts, and what are our alternatives? And I have not found a situation, frankly, in my now over 25 years of academic leadership, where people of goodwill couldn't work together if you approached it in that way. That's what I hope to do here.
Now, you've been in the field of higher education for many years now. Prior to that, you served in the U.S. Coast Guard for over 20 years. Why did you make that transition?
Well, the way you've phrased the question is not quite correct. While I was in the Coast Guard, 16 years of that time was on the faculty of the Coast Guard Academy. So I was 8 years on ships doing search and rescue and other duties at sea. And then I went to the faculty at the Coast Guard Academy. So the difference between those careers is not as sharp as I did this and then changed and did that. As a faculty member at the Coast Guard Academy, I did, however, understand that the world of civilian higher education was different. And I sought and was selected for an American Council on Education fellowship in 1990-91, where I went to the University of Colorado at Boulder. Very, very different environment from the 800-student Coast Guard Academy in New London, Connecticut, both to learn, to develop my skills and to demonstrate that I could function effectively in a very different world. It was always my intent to continue my career in higher education past my Coast Guard retirement, and that's what I've done.
What challenges does the publicly funded higher education system face at this point?
Well, that's it's an interesting question. The it varies state by state. For example, I come from Oregon, which in the last 15 years has fallen farther and faster than any state in the country in its public funding for higher education. And I come to Minnesota, where people experience some challenges in public funding for higher education, but where the fundamental commitment to public support for higher education and the value of higher education has never been in question. So states differ greatly in sort of the financial challenges. But everybody knows that there are financial challenges. I think one of the challenges that faces all public universities is an increasing public pressure for accountability. Given that costs are rising and that the competition for resources is a fact of life, the public wants to better understand what the public investment in higher education gives them. So they're very interested in the efficiency of education systems and getting their students to graduation. They want to know how successful our graduates are in getting jobs and establishing careers. They're curious about the economic value of our institutions to a community. And the public in general doesn't understand very well the work of the faculty. And they want to, they want evidence that helps them understand what faculty do with their time. And so they ask hard questions. And sometimes those questions are threatening to an academic community. But we have to understand that the public has a right to know, and that as educators, as teachers, we have to learn to describe our world to the greater public in a way that rebuilds the public's trust in our universities. And So between finances and public trust and accountability, we have our hands full.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, President Porter. Is there anything else you'd like to add that we may not have touched on?
No, Samrat. I appreciate the station's interest in the interview and your taking the time and the shape of your questions. I'm just very thankful for the spirit I have encountered at this university. And I'm very excited about the steps we're going to take together. It already is a great university, and there are many fine things that I know we'll do together over the next few years.
And now, before we end the interview, I just wanted to ask you, what kind of music do you like?
Well, I have pretty eclectic tastes. I like choral classical music. I like instrumental music. I like jazz and blues. I like the campus from which I came, they had a world music series that I really enjoyed, music from all different cultures. There are a few forms of music I don't enjoy, in fact.
And what is that?
I'm not a great fan of hip-hop. It's a generational thing, frankly. It has nothing to do with cultural issues. It's I grew up with the Beatles, so.
Who's your favorite singer?
Oh, that's really hard to say. I think my tastes are still of my generation. I like Billy Joel. I like the Beatles. I like Janis Joplin. I go back to that era that I was growing up in.
Thank you very much, President Porter.
Thanks.
Our guest today was newly appointed SCSU President Dr. Earl H. Porter III, joining us for a special interview on KVSC 88.1 FM, your sound alternative. Thank you for listening. I'm Samrat Kareel.